The DL Debate, brought to you by the Dry Arch Complex 24-hour service station Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.
It's 7 p.m, it's Monday evening, it's time for the DL Debate. Right, folks, welcome one and all. We had a wee bank holiday week off and we're back with a bang here on the DL Debate, beaming out from my dining room and the Highland Radio. The Canis there, he's looking after us and producing the show and out around the world on highlandradio.com. We're also all up on Spotify and iTunes as well. There's some people in London listening to this. Some lads have left the county over there. Dalton Malloy, Kieran Green, Peter Willerow, Michael Boyle, Owen McNeilis, all hooked up there. Not a bad start to a football team, actually. Joined up with a couple of lads there, Sean McBride and Stevie Collins over there. They're over there that long now. They're probably Cockneys at the moment. So listen, a shout out to them guys. Coming up on the show tonight, we have two men that know a good bit about sport in this county and have good opinions on it. That's Frank Craig and Kieran O'Donnell joining us for stories this evening. And just a special mention to our sponsors, Kieran Brogan and everybody on the front line. I hope you're keeping safe and I hope you enjoy the show. I'm joined by Frank Craig, Donegal News and Gaelic Life correspondent, to talk all things in the world of GAA. How are you today, Frank?
Yeah, not too bad, Brent. Not too bad at all.
You're in sunny... Where are you holed up at the minute? You in sunny Ardra?
No, sunny Balmafay here. Myself and my partner Fiona live in Balmafay. We just had a wee baby there before Christmas. So busy times.
You're not too far, though, from the shoot home there to get on the beach.
It's not
when
too
allowed,
bad.
Of course.
It's not too bad. I suppose with the quarantine and that 2 kilometre rule up until there last week, I mean, I haven't been back in Ardra in over a month, you know, and I suppose with a set of grandparents. It's different. Listen, it's strange times, but hopefully things are starting to open up a wee bit, and over the next maybe couple of weeks we'll see a change and I can introduce Blaine a wee bit more to South Donegal.
yeah, listen, we'll be all glad of that, of course, Frank. Frank, just looking at the current thing you're on about things opening up in terms of travelling, that I think the best we can hope for at the minute is some level of a condensed club championship. Would that be your feeling?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at this here, and I think the seriousness of it, and even listening to the GAA president and off the ball, I mean, if we're hoping, I mean, for an inter-county, even Darrell Whelan say he's going to go and use, I mean, you're hoping that those guys are looking at maybe October, November. I mean, if a club championship of some description is going to be played out before then, it's really hard to make any plans or set them in stone. There's these five phases that were released by the government, Brent. But again, I mean, their aims and estimates and something we can shoot for. But at the end of the day, you really have to take this week upon week. And I mean, in terms of football and sport in general and the greater scheme of things, I mean, it's going to have to take a backseat. And I know people maybe will trivialise it, shoot it down right away and put sports to the back of the queue. But listen, it is important. It gives a lot of people hope and it gives a lot of people entertainment and lifts spirits at the best of times. But I think at the moment you just have to take it as you see it, you know, week upon week, and hope against hope. But at the minute, Brent, it's very hard to foresee how we can have any sort of, you know, Indigenous games before the end of the year. I mean, for the likes of the Premier League, you look at the NBA, you know, the UFC held an event midweek there. And even with all the logistics and the expertise and money they were able to throw at the thing, I think that UFC, three people tested positive for Corona or COVID-19 the day of the event. So, I mean, this is what we're up against in terms of the GAA. I mean, a good organisation, a brilliant organisation, but I don't think it's at the professional level to even attempt to roll out something like that there in the near future.
Mm. Yeah, interesting, Frank. And we also, of course, have the cross-border situation and all kinds of mixed messages coming out of, as Sean Kavanagh called it there, I've seen in a video chat with Pat Spillan, us up here in the UK. I don't know how that's going to go down with some of the hardcore GAA in the north, but it was quite a comment. Did you see that comment?
I didn't hear it, but I've seen some tweets and some things on social media. Listen, as you well know, Britain live radio or these live web chats that there, I mean, fraudulent slip of the tongue. I mean, Sean, represented Ireland in international rules, is very proud Island of Ireland man, and listen, we'll not be too sore on him.
No.
I don't think.
He certainly dropped the ball that time, I think, mind you, Frank. Frank, I spoke to you last week just about the story that broke, and maybe it gained a lot of traction because there's very few GA stories, and I know everyone's getting inventive, no more than yourself reporting at the minute, but the story broke about the Carlow footballer. You did a bit of digging into that story, and what was the outcome of it?
Well, you're looking at that there. I mean, what broke first was that a GA player tested positive for a banned substance, and you know, you're wondering, a day or two later then it's revealed that it's a Carlow footballer, he's 35 years of age. It's a bit underwhelming, I suppose, and people kind of moved on quickly. But I thought that, you know, that made it all that bit more interesting, because for me, two things have either happened here. A, he's used a banned substance knowingly. This substance, I think it encourages or, you know, increases octane in the blood, which repairs muscles and hamstrings and things like that there fast. I suppose at 35 years of age, you want to remain in that inter-county bubble. We know there's certain individuals that are so obsessed with football. There's county players, but within even, you know, a county player's bubble, there's always those three or four individuals that want to push harder than the rest. And maybe this was a lad that was holding on and wanted to remain involved. That's one narrative. You know, he knowingly took that there substance. The other thing is, and you probably shed more light on this here, I mean, people think, you know, you read from the outside in a layman that somebody took a banned substance, you know, you have this vision of somebody maybe in a dark cubicle in a dressing room injecting something into his arm. You know, 9 times out of 10, you know, the rationale or the reason is much more innocent. I mean, I don't know if players are furnished with lists, but some of these banned substances are contained in cough medicine, they're contained in asthma inhalers, they're contained in over-the-counter medication. I mean, I can imagine somebody like Seamus Coleman at Everton Football Club has probably furnished with this sort of information on a daily basis. He's probably tested bloods and things like that. I'm sure somebody like a Jason Quigley under Golden Boy has furnished with this kind of information. I don't know if a Paddy McGrath or a Michael Murphy or a Ryan McHugh, just looking from a Donegal perspective, are furnished with this kind of information. You would know better. I mean, it's funny that your ex-footballer interviews journalists. It should be journalists interviewing ex-footballers. Do you know,
turn the tables on you. Turn the tables on you here, Frank.
Yeah, our GAA players, I mean, modern GAA players, given this information ad nauseum, where they should know every little detail of it.
Yeah, I'd still think, Frank, because of the amateur nature of it, and again, not wanting to play down the Carlow side of things, but you really think that probably the top teams, the teams in the top league and going to compete in the latter stages of the championship, that they do know everything. I just think, Frank, that it's not an issue for me, because I think that football, you have to be a footballer first, and the fitness and all that's all there waiting on you. And I've never seen a lad come off the pitch at an inter-county level, at the elite level, saying, this guy was just too fit for me. You know, if you get outplayed, you get outplayed by someone's abilities. So if it's something like athletics or cycling or that, I think, yeah, it just matters. Everything matters, you know, and what constitutes as a supplement can be a lot of things. I think it's a dangerous one, Frank. I just think for that lad himself, you know, 35, you're going to have that hanging over you for years. Like, it's some way to end your career, if you like, and I suppose that's interesting aspects. But my fear, Frank, would be that young fellas, I think, is more in danger, maybe 17 to, say, 21, when they're at that maybe bulking up stage. Because if you look at the trajectory of your life, you know, I mean, the last ESRA study showing about like 61% of GAA footballers had a degree, which is almost double what the normal population is. So, you know, there's education there. There's a trajectory of life, and maybe you'll think, right, I'm a bit small, I'm a bit light. They need to take some of this, and that would be my danger. Someone could get themselves into trouble around that side of things, rather than, as you said, it was a strange one, somebody at 35. If that was the case, maybe it was innocent, right? But certainly it's a lot of pressure to come on a lad from an amateur game that he's playing.
Well, the point you've made there about a 17 and 18 year old, the weekend that broke, I'm pretty sure it was the same weekend Jim McGuinness did a webinar. That's one of the new terms that we've learned as well during Corona. But he gave a great talk about coaching and his time, you know, at GA and soccer. But one of the things that really caught my ear was in terms of identifying players and bringing them to the clubs. He's talking about Brenton Rodgers of Celtic, Roger Schmidt in China, and even what he tried to do himself in America. He says, with high press game now in Gaelic football, like soccer, he says he identifies an athlete first. You look for the athlete that can perform a high press for over 90 minutes or in GAA Championship 70. So when you're looking to identify an athlete, myself and yourself both know, in terms of natural ability players out there, there are some brilliant natural players out there, but there are some lads that will never be built to press and run for 90 minutes. It's just not in their makeup. I mean, there's players over the years. I mean, off the top of my head, I'll pick an Adrian Sweeney. Natural ability, unbelievable. But I don't know if Adrian Sweeney would want to exist in the modern game and press and press like that. A Dermot Brick Malloy, say, huge natural ability. Would he want to put himself out there? I mean, you're a natural athlete. You were an athlete, you know. Maybe you would survive in that there kind of environment. So the point I'm making is, if managers and coaches are demanding this amount of energy to be spent over 70 or 90 minutes, depending on the code of football you're playing, well, maybe this is the route some lads are going to have to go. And as you say, indirectly, maybe things like education, careers, you know, which being associated with a successful county panel gives you a leg up on. And as you say, maybe that's the train of thought there as well. Maybe there's a pressure or a duress from people maybe to try and find that extra inch or that, you know, that extra mile. And this is the culture that we're now entering, because there's certainly a gym culture out there with 17 to 25-year-olds. Now, nobody's in bad shape anymore. Not like when we were growing up, you know, lads look after themselves physically. And there's nothing wrong with that, but that's the place where you need to be introduced to those, I suppose, you know, pitfalls is gym locker rooms and around that kind of environment, no doubt.
Yeah, and listen, I would have survived fine. You know, I love me tackling back and all that, Frank. It was one of the hallmarks of it. And, you know, that I think there's just, you opened up a huge debate there for me, and I would be very against that thing of looking at a lad as an athlete. You know, this is not athletics.
Oh, without a doubt, and yeah, that was something that I was against. But I started looking then and identifying maybe sort of cut across you, but some of the panels Jim McGinnis put together in his 4 years, and you know, you were looking at athletes. You know, that was the first train of thought, because we knew that maybe, you know, you read, and there were certain players he didn't fancy. You know, you read his book at the outset because they didn't fit into that kind of template, but maybe just by sheer ability, some of the lads, you know, force their way in. But I mean, as you say, you know, you have issues with that.
Yeah, listen, I would, Frank, because what you're doing there is someone with Jim's level of coaching to that absolute extreme, which, don't get me wrong, God, has brilliant results in that. But I just think from a perspective of watching a game, once a team acts like his team, which we've seen happen in the years after, we're down to that famous Ulster final of 2016, Donegal and Tyrone, which was absolutely shocking. And that's where that type of sport gets you. And if you are reliant on, it's almost like for Jim, he's like the chess master, and everybody was there with the pawns and the bit in it, and he needed you at a certain level to carry out them instructions. Now, I think what that does, it takes away, as you're saying, the abilities that we want to go and see, you're not going to see them then, because everybody's playing to a role in a system, and he doesn't have that freedom to go and, you know, express himself. And that's where we like to see our footballers playing. Now, listen, there's a balance there, Frank, don't get me wrong. It's not as if we can go and just do our luxury players if we like. We know who they are and give them the ball. There is two sides to that. Just when I hear things like that about looking at the athlete first, like that sends a shiver down my spine, because what we're going to see then is robotic football, and that's not the way sport's supposed to be. Have spontaneity, it's supposed to be exciting, there's supposed to be thrills and spills. Right now, the way possession game's going, the athleticism going, it's all taken away. Certain parts of it now, I think, again, Frank, things have evolved again to open up again, because enough people have tried to come up with a separate plan. And listen, our own manager, Declan Bonner, and his team have tried to be that bit more open and try and play. And I think, as we've seen with the Dubs, you can't, you know, defend your way to a title. You have to score, and I think that's what's opened up the game again.
Of course, and I mean, just to backtrack on that original point, I mean, it's maybe that view of the game that maybe we talk about, just genius and natural ability. You know, lads like Jamie Clark or even Oren Manelis are going to dip in and out more frequently. I think you'll see that happening, because you just strangle, as you say, the natural flair out of them, and they can probably still play a club game and you know, scratch that itch and express themselves and kick a bit of ball the weekend. That's what it'll come down to. So you'll see players making big decisions.
Yeah, Jesus. So, Frank, listen, brilliant points, and I know you've got a big paint job on there today. I don't want to keep you back from it. You've got to keep things in quarantine now. You've got to keep everybody happy. There's nowhere to run, Frank, nowhere to hide.
Thanks
so much for sharing. It's great points there, Frank, and shedding light on this fella in Carlow, and hopefully he can get on with his life pretty soon, Frank, and we'll catch up soon.
Yeah,
Right, folks, now I'm delighted to say I'm joined by a man that has 30 plus years in Donegal news and sport, a reporter, deputy editor and author. Kieran O'Donnell joins me on the DL Debate. Kieran, listen, thanks very much for joining us, Kieran. Listen, huge story that you have all these years of reporting, some fantastic tales and moments in Donegal sport and tragedy in the midst of it as well. Kieran, and I want to go through this story with you today. I hope our listeners enjoy it. Kieran, before we get into all the reporting side of things and that, your early days in Letterkenny, growing up in on a sports mad house, which was the foundation for what you were going to get future employment in?
Yeah, I suppose, look, Letterkenny was a much smaller town then, Brendan, and I suppose Gaelic and soccer, whenever it was going, I had two older brothers. The oldest fellow was on the Gaelic and soccer, and he had been part of those successful St. Junior's College teams in the late 70s. And the boy next to me, he was into boxing and cycling. So a bit of music thrown in there as well, so it was good old crack. And I suppose, look, we played street leagues, and we played in the street leagues for at St. Junior's as well, Gaelic and soccer. So that was that type of life, was very basic, and it was good old fun. And the friends that I made back then are still good friends today. They get everybody else, you know. So
I remember them street leagues. We used to get drafted in from Newton and everything. The community centre, the indoor games.
That's right.
You know, we used to play Sean Devaney, my uncle there. He had a Beetle, and I remember the full team. Well, it was only five, I said, obviously, but I remember whoever was all this carry all piled under this Beetle. They go up the road. It was an exciting time, so to get playing.
Aye, so Main Street, Old Town, and then, you know, I come up to, I played with the Kerry Rovers underage, and I was first off to be in the first team for a few seasons at the end of the 80s, and I would have been involved as well with St. Junior's, played underage, played reserve, and had a big involvement in athletics. So I liked all things sport, Brendan, you know, and thankfully when I was younger, my father used to throw us all into the back of the car and head away up to Finn Harps or up to Donegal games in the Championship. So from that early stage, I suppose that I sort of had a love for it. And two brothers, one was a United fan, one was a Chelsea fan, and I became an Arsenal supporter. So it's been a painful experience for the last while.
But, tell me, your dad's a Glenties man. He played County Minor.
Dad played County Minor. Was he 35? It'd have been 1953, I would say, around that stage. Even though he's in Letterkenny all his life, I'm still convinced that he's still a Glenties man, you know.
Say so.
But look, I suppose one of my first memories, I suppose, of a sporting memory, appropriate enough, I suppose, was when I was up in Donegal, played Galway in the 1974 All Ireland semi final. I was only 5 years age, Brendan. I don't remember anything about the game.
Yeah, you don't remember
it. But what I do remember is been in a car, and there must have been maybe 10 young fellas on it, you know. But I remember after the match, Paul McGilligan, he was a very young man that time, I think he might have been about 17, but Donegal lost the game, obviously, and I remember seeing this man, I was a wee boy, obviously, but Paul McGilligan was in tears, you know, and I was so struck by it. It's the first time I saw a man crying, but it was obviously, it meant so much to him, and it was always sort of stuck with me then, you know. And I suppose, you know, a few years after that, got up to Finn Park and watching Finn Harps when they were on their pomp and their heyday, you know, and seeing the likes of Jim Sheridan and Brendan Bradley, you know, they were big heroes for us, you know, at that time. So, look, it was all good.
Yeah, there was something special about Harps in Kieran in sport. There was there was much less of it in terms of the media side of things.
Our heroes were few and far between, but we're very proud of them nonetheless. I mean, Danny McDaid was a double Olympian that time, 72 and 76. I don't remember much about 72, but I do remember 76. I remember going over, it was a black and white television, and the games were in Montreal. And I was trying to pick him out because he used to wear this very distinctive white cap, you know, in the middle of the crowd starting out. So, I suppose the seeds for my love of sport were sown at a very early age, Brendan, you know.
And tell me, the press side of things, then, you did a bit of a course in the old tech out there,
I did a few jobs after I left school. I sold insurance for a while, I sold ice cream, I sold minerals, I was in the bar trade, and then around about 89, I decided I would try and go back because I had a love of writing and I had a love of sport. I thought I'd try and combine the two. So I did a part-time diploma in the regional technical college, which is now the LYIT, and I got up to the area called college and did my shorthand and my typing. And my first report was actually was printed on my 21st birthday on the 23rd of November 1989. It was an Ulster Senior League game between the Kenny Rovers and Fine Irish Reserves. And I was trying to think about it last night, who won. The score was 5-0. I can't remember who won. So that was the start of it. And then I was contributing to both the Democrat and the People's Press. Michael Daly was a sports editor of the Democrat. John McIntyre, the late John McIntyre, was the editor of the People's Press. And then he was retiring midway through 1990. Seamus McKinney was appointed as the new editor, and I was taken on that time as a trainee reporter.
And this was back in typewriter times?
Back in typewriter time.
It's hard to believe.
I remember my father dropped me off and carrying this typewriter up the stairs up the Port Road. Look, it was the start of a great journey and a great career, and thankfully I'm still keeping my hand on it, which is great, you know.
And tell me, you played a bit for Rovers, like some Gorman
and McGovern. I saw a wee piece here at me that day recently with Chris McNulty. He was kind of recalling his first steps into adult football. Stanley White would have been the manager, I think, of the D&D team at that stage, and myself and Paul McGovern were sort of giving our debut. That day, and that was a big time, you know. I mean, Anthony and Paul McGovern were on a different level. Anthony was a super player and a super attitude. I think Paul McGovern had great potential and could have went on more, you know. But of the three, I was all hurt and all for long. But the boys were certainly they had a wee much more depth in terms of their touch, you know.
You had the sub four shorts on. Yeah. You were running around with it. So, and Kane, so you were. You were at the paper. You were doing. Was it mostly sport?
Yeah. Well, I suppose at that stage, you know, local journalism, and I still that way to a large degree. Well, maybe to a less extent now. It's more specialised. But back then, you know, you did a bit of everything, Brendan. But the main thing I was employed with, in terms of the People's Press position, was news and sport and GAA, and I was a GAA correspondent, basically, you know. Yeah. So that was a big thing. So my first assignment as a full-time reporter was back in 1990 when Donegal, they just beaten Armagh in the Ulster final to win their fourth Ulster title, and we went up that day, and it was a wet day. But I remember, you know, being up at that stage, I had been in Croke Park for the other semi-finals, 83, when Galway beat us by a last-minute goal. And then 1990, so, you know, 7 years was a big change, but to be up there and actually to be getting, that was your job, to be up in Croke Park and being in the press box was, you know, it was a big change, and it was very exciting. And I suppose when you were, you know, I always had huge interest. I remember when I was young, we used to get the Sunday Press and the Sunday Independent, and one of the things I used to do was I was kind of obsessed about St Durin's and go to the Donegal News at that stage and see, well, where were they? Where are they on the table? You know, how many points have they got? And Martin McHugh was always the leading scorer, and even though Donegal might have been doing Division 3 at one stage, Martin McHugh was still the main scorer in the National Football League. So I was kind of obsessed with things like that, and how Finn Harris were doing or how Danny McDade was doing. So when you're then all of a sudden, then you were sort of there in the middle of it, then you were sort of reporting and relaying back to your own people, because look, back then, Brendan, you know, it was a different, the landscape of news and how it was delivered and how it was consumed was much, much different than it is now. Newspapers were king back then and were for a long time, but I mean, social media, local radio and the internet has just blown all that away, you know.
Yeah, and listen, I totally agree. And going up to Croke Park now to cover games, listen, it doesn't matter if play there or whatever, it's a different feeling. There's such a good vibe.
Yeah.
You see all the guys from the TV that you would have known.
Oh, there's a great old buzz.
There's a great camaraderie there. You
do develop good friendships, you know, and you mightn't catch these fellas maybe for 6 months or a year at a time, but you know, you'll always have the link with them, you know. And sometimes, you know, in the game, you know, if you're looking for a favour or you're looking for a stat or you're just not sure, that's the networking you use, Brendan, and there is a good togetherness in relation to people involved in the media game, you know.
Yeah, and by the time the big one came along, you were in the Derry Journal. 92.
Yes, I moved from the Derry Journal at the end of 91, the start of 92, and again, news and sport, but my sport was predominantly looking after Donegal GA, so I sort of at the jackpot there, because I was there that year, obviously. Donegal went on that unforgettable run, and myself and Conor McGonigal, Conor was the photographer, we were two young boys about town that stage in terms of trying to get all the news and all the angles and all the photographs, so it was a great time, and I mean, you know, I was listening back just coincidentally to Anthony Molloy's reliving the All-Ireland speeches there on RT last week. And, you know, you never get tired listening to it, you know. you know, we could have won it 100 times, but there's only one first time, and to be there and to witness it, and for a man like Anthony Molloy, who was always our spiritual leader, and he was always such a gentleman, and still a gentleman, you know, and I would have time to cross paths yet with him, and he never changed, but he was such a great ambassador, and you know, it was a great time. I remember when he was captain that time, you know, trying to get people that time on the phone, Brian, was quite difficult because mobile phones weren't there. Mm-hmm. Anthony worked as an ESB linesman, and I would ring the office. Pat Cullen was his boss, former St. Junior's man, who wanted to be county chairman, actually, living in Killybegs. He would get Anthony to ring me back, and look, there was no problem, but he was always very obliging, mm-hmm. and all that team at that stage were very obliging, and thankfully I can all call them, you know, good fellas, and you know, you can always have the yarn with them, you know. So
yeah, you think now maybe hearing about the distance between
and players. Yeah, I think just the way that the whole social media has sort of impacted on things. I mean, you know, you look at some of the things here now, and you know, I suppose these phones, you can pull them out and you can relive things. And I mean, back then, like whatever went on, there was no replay of anything off the pitch or whatever, you know. But I think, you know, there was. Maybe the times were a wee bit less complicated, we would say, and they were a wee bit easier.
Yeah, surely. See, the journal then, Kieran, was out. Was that the first paper out? But so in 92, you say, so yeah, you were like, so, not as if you were breaking the story as such, but no, you were the first story there with,
yeah, well,
with,
I suppose,
at the Donegal shops, you know.
The Dairy Journal came out on, it was Tuesday and Friday at that stage, and I suppose, on the local region, I know the People's Press kind of came out. It was kind of between Thursday at that stage and then Wednesday, and the Donegal News was out on the Thursday night, Friday morning. So, yeah, I suppose that was one of the first publications at that stage, you know. And I remember coming home, I still hadn't a care at that stage. I was actually up with my father. He drove me down again, and it was just getting all the copy together and writing, and you know. It was just kind of automatic for about a day and a half, because I had about 6 o'clock the next day to get the copy away, and I suppose seeing the Dairy Journal the next day with Anthony Molloy just dispatched across the front with Sam as for the Hills, you know, it was a good keepsake to have, because you know,
was there a wee picture of you down
the corner? No. The one people that buy the paper, Brendan.
So tell me again, so the Journal then, they kind of took over newspapers?
Yeah, so within 3 or 4 years, to 94, 95, I'm just not sure in what sequence, but the Dairy Journal Group, which is owned by the McCarroll family, they purchased both the People's Press, which was owned by the Townsend, which is part of the Sligo Champion setup, and they also bought the Democrat, which was owned by the King family. So that was a major development in local newspaper at that stage, Brendan, because you know, all of a sudden you had three titles that were actually sort of grouped into one group, you know, and obviously, and so the Dairy Journal had an office in Letterkenny, it closed, and then I sort of went in and back into the Donegal Democrat, and then I ended up working with the Donegal Democrat, Donegal People's Press again, so sort of full circle, you know, and then we opened the office then across from Dunn Stores back in 2001, so I was there then up until end of 2017.
Sometime. You're obviously keeping fit yourself. You got married, you had three kids, yeah. You were busy, you were club captain. You know, life must have been just on the fast lane.
Aye, it was only when you look back and you go, how do you manage all that? But at the time, it was just the sort of norm that you got on with it, you know, and I suppose maybe a bit more energy then, but, you know, I enjoyed it, and I gave 100% to, you know, and as you mentioned the athletic club there, you know, I ran a wee bit when I was younger, I had a huge interest in it, and then I went back then in the mid-90s, I used to run some of the local races there, and I stopped playing football, and I was looking to stay in a bit of shape, and I met Herbie McDade and Teresa. Teresa was the coach. Herbie was still competing, and Gary Crossan was club captain at the time. And, you know, they were very, very encouraging in terms of getting it back and getting involved in the club with them. Within a few years then, I was very proactive myself, and I took over the club captain, actually, from Gary Crossan about 97, 98. And look, it was great then. I filled different roles in the club, you know, and I still take great sense of pride of pulling on the black and amber vest for Lyrican Athletic Club anytime I go to the race, you know.
Good man, good man. And still in all, you took on the huge undertaking of writing a book.
Yeah.
With ten Donegal Sporting
right.
Heroes. Was this something was in the mind for years? And you know what I'm thinking? When I look at different reporters there and you know, the fact that you're an author, I think, stands to you. Was it something that, along with it, something you thought about, a passion, is it good for your name or your resume that, listen, I'm an author as well, or is that part of it at all?
Look, I was never really about that, but at the same time, once I made the decision to do this, Brendan, I suppose, you know, you've got to work, picture the end game and work back. So that was the approach I took because it was the end of 2009. I had come out of hospital. Actually, I wasn't feeling that great for a couple of days. I had headaches and that sort of stuff. There was nothing major, but just I was just a bit off form. And I was lying on the sofa at the house, and I was half sleeping. And this program started, and it was called No Ordinary Joe. And look, if that program hadn't come on, the book probably wouldn't have actually evolved. It's as simple as that, but. It was Joe Barr from your own hometown of Newton, who was a big name in cycling. Again, the brother next to me, Jared, he was big in the cycling, so I knew Joe Barr, I knew his boot, and I hadn't heard from him for an age. I thought, this story here. So the story was, he was doing the cycle around Ireland to raise money for his sick son who had a brain tumour. So
I remember that.
Yeah, so, you know, after that then, I was sort of very taken by the programme. I was a father of young children myself, and obviously involved in sports. So what I arranged a meeting then in the Everglades Hotel in Derry to do a piece about himself. And I was still kind of floating around my mind. And that Christmas then, just after the Christmas dinner, I was speaking to Jared, one of the brothers, and I was kind of saying, you know, there's a book on that Joe Barr man, you know, and then the conversation went a bit, you know, there's a book on Donegal, Sporting Greats, and blah, blah, blah. So, look, I drew up a long list, and every time I knew that everybody on the list wasn't going to make it. So, listen, I decided on 10. It's not the 10 that are the only Donegal Sporting Heroes, but the 10 that I selected, and I suppose everything's sort of subjective. But, look, Joe Barr, obviously, Brian McAniff, Martin McHugh, Paddy Bonner, Shea Given, Danny McDade, Rory Kennedy, Sinead Jennings, Patsy McGonigal, and Jim Sheridan. So I took the two boys over to Celtic Dundee United. Robbie Keane scored a penalty. We were behind the goal. Connor, the second fella, was a big big Celtic fan, Robbie Keane fan at that stage. David was an Arsenal fan like myself. So we come back. That Sunday, and I'm going to meet Danny on the Monday because I told him what the crack was and he agreed to do it. So I contacted the rest and then after that and they all agreed, nobody refused. But I was there for Danny and the way the book worked, it was many hours of conversations face to face apart from Paddy Bonner who was in Scotland. Everybody else had it face to face. I would drive them on the weekends, on even times when to finish up. But I was there for about 2 or 3 years, I would say, and he gave me a whole big bag of stuff. And, I remember getting into the car and heading into town. There was a wild bit of snow in the road because it was a serious bad winter. Hey, and I remember thinking to myself, no, what have I got myself in for? So, look, long story short, I just went at it. I had to be very disciplined. So at any free time at all, I was on my laptop. And within 8 months, I had the book written. I approached Gene Long, who was the managing director of the Derry Journal Group, and they agreed to publish the book.
So, did you give your share of your proceeds to charity?
Yeah, I didn't make one red cent of the book.
The
profit was split between Donegal or Northern Ireland Cancer Care for Children and Barristown and County Meath. That's a centre for giving people a break that have children who aren't well.
Very good. You had a big night in the Mount Argyll launch.
Yeah, look, we had a big night. We had. There's around about 600 at the launch, you know. So
Terry put up a few free sandwiches.
Listen, Terry looked after us very well. And look, you know, I suppose, going back to what I said to you earlier, you know, when you take on something like that, you had a picture of the end game. So I remember going out, and I didn't know how many, it could have been 10 there, 20 there, and I was a wee bit nervous, you know. And I remember looking down, going, because I was out about 4 o'clock, and I thought, I'm not going to be here later on. But thankfully, people came out and supported it, and obviously it was a good cause as well. And look, as people have said to me since, it's, you know, it's a good reference book in terms of, it chronicles very much the life and times of those 10 people, you know. And I must say, they were all very, very accommodating and very, very obliging. And, you know, I suppose, it tied in, I suppose, my love of sport and my love of writing and the both, and to get the opportunity to sort of tell the stories, I thought was quite an honour, you know, and to have it there on the bookshelf was a nice feeling.
Yeah,
you know?
And I would say, Kieran, as well, because of your upbringing, you were able to dip into each. I mean, there's loads of people, like GAA correspondents, wouldn't go near a cyclist, yeah, or someone doing athletics.
I suppose, yeah, the one thing, I'm a sports fan. I'm not Gaelic only, I'm not soccer only, I'm not motorsport only, I'm not athletics only, local horse racing, cycling, you know, so anything sort of goes with me, you know. And I suppose the reason that, I suppose, I decided to take on the challenge of the book print was, I wanted to sort of see what made these people tick, you know. There are different stories that sort of stand out, but I suppose one of them, in relation to Martin McHugh, it was his 21st birthday, you know, and he had gone down to the field kicking, and his mother must have had a wee party sort of organised for him at the house. But, you know, by the time Martin got back up again, I think it was very late, but he had this thing in his head that he would never leave the field until he kicked 10 successive points. So that was just a wee indication that day. So we take it back to when I was a wee fella looking at the paper, and there was Martin McHugh, you know. And I remember we got over actually interviewing him in 92 before the All-Ireland, you know, because there was such a buzz around the county at that time. And Mark, his oldest son, was only a young fella in his arms, just maybe about two, you know. And so Mark went on to win the All-Ireland in 2012. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking down after the final whistle went in 2012, and quite a significant, or quite a poignant image of Martin and Mark embracing, you know. And that took me back to the day that I was interviewing Martin when Mark was a wee boy, you know. So there's a wee link all the time, and wee things that sort of join up at those times, you know, which is nice.
Lovely link, lovely link. And speaking of links, what about Donegal Sporting Heroes 2? Is there a...
Yeah, look, follow? I suppose, look, I would like to write another book. I don't know what the nature is. I suppose we have a lot of sporting successes nationally at the moment and internationally. And I suppose the reality is a lot of them are still at their game, Brendan. They're not retired or near retirement age. So, you know, definitely, you know, I've been asked a few times, would you do another one? Yes, I would like to do it. What the subject matter is, I'm just not sure for now. But it would have been a great time had I known that this current situation that we're stuck in was coming. I definitely would have had my ducks in a row, and I could have the thing finished by now. Really.
The ducks, you know, in a row, good line. You know, funny, just speaking with Joe Barr there, I go on to Mickey Kerr, he's top physio in there, he does triathlons and that, and him and Joe be very tight. And I could tell from Mickey when I was playing with Donegal, we'd be training maybe say 3 times a week or whatever, and I'd be thinking I'm fit. I could tell the way he was like, no, see what this man's like. And I always used to leave here thinking, you know, maybe am I really fit? Because I could tell from Kerr that you're not in the same level at all. Like, and Barr was some athlete, of course. And listen, you even found time to come to the rescue of Unions at a phase there. Kilcoyne put out the SOS. We'd lost a couple of finals. we were on our knees, Kieran, and you landed but by accident at the end of the park.
Well, look, I suppose, look, I knew Brendan, and I Brendan had come to the other Kenny's work at the bank. I used to be in the gym, and then he was captain with Sligo. And I suppose, you know, in terms of wee features, I thought, you know, there's an idea there. There was talk nicely about the long commute, and the, you know, it was time when Intercounty was starting to up a notch, Brendan. It was getting a wee bit more professional, or a lot more professional, and, you know, the demands that were being placed on players. And I suppose it hasn't changed a whole lot since, but it was the change from what used to be the norm to the serious level of professionalism. And, so I thought I would, maybe 97, maybe 98, I went down with Brendan, and I shared a carriage journey with him. So it was a day in the life of an inter-county footballer who was working in another county and living in another county, and he happened to be the captain of the Sligo team at that stage.
And fine, Brendan, fine card was the Nova. You know that? You took your life in the hands.
He used to call it the bone shaker. But look, you know, like it was a great, Brendan shared a story with me, and I suppose we got on well anyway. So I had Brendan's number and my phone. So it was the first Monday in January, the phone rang, and Brendan was a crack. So anyway, look, he was looking to see if I could help with the wee program for pre-season for St. Unions. And I was kind of involved in the athletic club at that stage, and I said, sure, Brendan, we'll get you sorted, you know. So, but anyway, look, overtime then, I agreed in the ground and we'd be taking our session. We're down at the old track at the community centre. And by the time the first game of the league came around, I was sort of down as the full-time trainer. Neil Campbell was goalkeeping coach and Big Vince McGlynn was the kit man. That was it, you know. So, look, it was...
I suppose people talk to me about maybe the best times in sport are the most poignant moments. Mm. And you shared one that season with Unions. We had lost two championships in our two finals in a row,
right.
And we got hammered. Niamh Conlon, the first game, we were beat by 11 points, and then we had about 6 or 7 injuries. We had to go and ask Damon Doherty's dad. He was only 16. We had no players, and that team was on his knees. And you think you remarked to me before about walking in the dressing room, you hit by a wall of emotion, you know?
Yeah, look, I suppose there are different things that always stand out in my own sporting life, you know, in terms of experiences you've had, but, you know, that particular day that we played Glenties, we had got hockey the Sunday before. Leo McCroon scored 4 goals. We were sort of shell-shocked, and as you say, we were very depleted with injuries. And I remember I went out to set up the warm-up area out at on the back pitch, and we had the boombox on. Obviously, we're trying to change things in terms of, you know, create a wee bit of positivity.
You brought a different style,
yeah. Well, the job was very much on the physical end of things, you know. Now and again, it took a wee bit of time to sort of focus on people's mental preparation and their mindset, you know. And, you know, you wouldn't make a big deal of it, but subtly you would try and do things there, you would change, you know. And you could see it kind of, sort of maybe developing over time, but I suppose, like anything, if you're training a team, Brendan, looking at them, I think the onus is very much on the coach or the trainer to create the conditions that will allow the players or the athletes or whoever you're looking after to excel to the best they can. You know, all that players can do is create that atmosphere that will allow them to do it. The players do it themselves, I always feel. But if you allow the atmosphere and allow the environment for them to do that, it'll come easier to them. And I suppose in terms of, you know, buying in with togetherness and application and dedication and positivity and energy. So that day when we played Glenties, I'm about to set up the warm-up. And when I come in again, I remember opening the door. You know, it was like some sort of an energy surge nearly knocking me back. I've thought a long time, but it's not sometimes you get an award for it, and I still just can't figure it out. But anyway, there was just something in the room and the dressing that day that was just magic. And I remember when we locked up, Pat Cramsey was another man, actually. He was involved in the backroom team with the kid as well, I'm just thinking. And I remember looking around, Kevin Rafferty had a broken collarbone and couldn't play, and he was quite distraught before that, and we were kind of annoyed for Big Raf, and Raf was annoyed he couldn't play. And Brendan was very passionate. But I remember looking around, and probably Pat Cramsey is the one man that sort of stood out to my mind as well, because we're looking around, and, you know, there was no man that didn't have a tear in his eye. And I remember looking up where the wall met the ceiling, and I thought that the stand was actually top, and it couldn't happen, but I remember looking up for the wall and met the scene, and I thought, that's just going to explode. It was just incredible. So, look,
we won by, I think, 12, which was a bit of a remarkable turnaround. Yeah. But, yeah, if you could bottle it, I think it was one of those things, just, you know, we were completely backed into a corner, and it was either you're going to fold, and that's yous, or you're going to, there was only one thing to do, was come out fighting, and that's the kind of thing here. I don't know. I've never been in a dressing room like that ever. Any all the times we've done Donegal or playing any other side, I've never ever seen anything at that level anywhere near it. It was a pretty, pretty special time, hey, and great to be involved. And Don that won the championship. Lucky for us. And but again, as you said, the championship to me is secondary to that. Thought that time in that dressing room was magical. Again, you've covered so many brilliant stories. There's been some tragedies in there as well. You know, people you've known well that are no longer with us.
Yeah, one of them, I suppose, we kind of mentioned earlier, Rory Kennedy, is one of the 10 people profiled in the book, and he talked about, I was getting the news that his driver, Bertie Fisher, who was a Donegal rallying champion, had died in a helicopter crash with a few other members of his family, you know, and that was, you know, that was a huge blow that time for Donegal Motorsport, and for Rory and that. And I suppose, unfortunately, I suppose it sort of come back to us then very much last year with Manus Kelly. And the irony of that is, you know, it was the word came through of Manus's death the day that Donegal were and Clonus playing those to final against Cavan, you know. And, you know, Manus's story, you know, Manus was a real charismatic character, you know, and he was very affable and he was very popular. And, you know, a story, he'd won three Donegals, you know, before that, but won on the national championship, actually, the year before he won his first Donegal was probably a better story to Manus because he had been trying so long and he had his own bad luck as well before that. But look, you know, it left a huge mark on the sport and motorsport and in the whole area, you know. And I suppose as I was reflecting on things and involved in the sport, that's one thing that sort of come to mind, you know.
Ah, he was a great lad indeed, Manus. Tell me, Kieran, at the minute you're doing a bit of freelance. I see you've got Sean McEwen out in Chicago, one of our lads who's getting into shape. I noticed him the last day, he gave me a video call and I could see the jawline. He says, Kieran, the doc has me kicked into gear again.
Look, I'm still doing, I do a bit of coaching there. Look, I'm still competing myself. The aim is now to get no slower. I was looking at a few of the marathon fellas that are in the club this last few years as well, giving them a hand, and a few people that I'm sort of looking after. So, Sean's one of a few I'm looking after. He's in good old shape, Ty. He likes, I suppose, it's a good connection for home with him, and it's a good way of keeping the body right and the head right, because he's a busy man with a big job, you know.
I think I need your help. Tell me what, two sons and a daughter, they're all active playing sport, and I'm reading up about them now. They're doing the business.
Well, they're all through unions. David's kind of more soccer. He's been back to play a bit with the third this year. Kier's played underage for club and county, and Connor is the same, you know. So the two boys, I suppose, were a big part of that crack in 2007.
That's right.
So
they'd be out every night.
They were like two mascots, you know.
That's right.
But I suppose the only thing just to mention as well that I do a bit of coaching with the 24/7 club as well. And between the 24/7 club and the Letterkenny Athletic Club, we're kind of developing these sort of club challenges at the minute that are keeping us sort of busy. So there's plenty of slagging and plenty of crack on the groups, you know.
Yes. Funny, just going back to that 2007, there's certain things printed in the mind, but you at half time, we were playing Clans Swilly. You would do some rant. You were going round and round the physio table, and you talking about the roof going to come off. No, it was just passion. You knew how close we were, but you were like letting everybody know, do not let this go. You were too far.
I'm word for it.
I would say the voice was gone after that. So at the minute, Kane, you're thinking about the book. You're doing your bit of freelance. You're keeping fit, and you're keeping everybody else fit. And it's life's good.
I'm enjoying it. You know, look, I'm doing a bit of freelance featuring for the Donegal News at the minute, and funny, Barry Patton, the former Finn Harps player, was the last fella that had profiled in a couple of weeks ago, you know. So I like dipping in and out of that sort of stuff and getting the time to do it. And I suppose the thing I like talking to people, I like getting the story from them, and I like putting it together, you know. Yeah. So
listen, if that book about the sports stars, I think you could nearly do a book of short stories. There's a lot of stuff in there. You don't have to come clean with everything yourself now, but there's plenty of stories in there, Kieran. And listen, it's been fantastic talking to you, hey, and thanks for all the input and the great stories over the years. Much appreciated. That's Kieran O'Donnell. Thank you, sir. Right, folks, that's it. That's a wrap. Episode 12 is in the bag. I hope you enjoyed it. It's on Spotify, on iTunes, and HighlandRadio.com. That was top stuff there from Frank Craig, and of course, brilliant to hear anybody's life story, but so a man that's been involved in so much of Donegal sport, Kieran O'Donnell. Found that fascinating, great stories. There'd probably another hour on it if we had wanted it. So fantastic stuff from the two guys, and thank you all for listening, and we'll talk next week.
The DL Debate, brought to you by the Dry Arch Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.